This is a podcast called Walk, Talk, Listen. An attempt to connect people and make this world a bit better by sharing opinions and experiences based on the belief that everyone's perspective is true, albeit partial. My name is Maurice Bloem, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Walk, Talk, Listen. Okay, good day, everybody. This is yet another episode of the podcast Walk, Talk, Listen. And as always, I'm really delighted to have a wonderful guest and friend as well. And I ask her to introduce herself. Eunice, can you please go ahead?
Hi, Maurice. I'll introduce myself briefly. My name is Eunice Kamaru. I am a professor of African Christian Ethics in the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies at Moi University. And in the past served in the International Board of Directors of Church World Service, which is where I met Maurice.
While we are having this conversation, you know, Eunice is back home in Kenya. And as she said, yes, we know each other from our work together at CWS. But Eunice is also a very special person in a sense that she's one of those people that joined me on one of the days that I did a 100-mile walk a couple of years ago. And why she's extra special, because she's one of the few, if not, I don't know if there is anybody else. Yes, there are a couple of others, but she is the one that walked with me for the whole day. So that means... If I recall it properly, it was more than 20 miles that we walked together, right? So yes. it was a good day, but it was also tough at times, right? Because that's what you have when you go for a long distance, where you think like, why am I doing this? So I'm really thankful for the fact that you did that. Eunice, you know that I started to walk this 100 mile to raise awareness around hunger and poverty. If you would be asked to walk 100 miles, right, by yourself, what is the cause that you would walk for?
A 100 miles. First, I don't know if I would make it. When we did the few miles with you, you remember I was literally crawling towards the end of the day.
No, but you did it. You finished it. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but... it's really something. But if I was to do it, I would do it for my mother. Mm. For whatever. If my mother said, I would like you to give me a gift, and the gift is to walk 100 miles, I would walk 100 miles. Particularly if it was something about her health and mm-hmm. well-being. Yes.
Yeah. Great. And that's something else that we have in common. I mean, we are... Unfortunately, my mom passed away last year, but... we were close to our mothers, and we were very thankful for everything that they enabled us to do, right? What drives you in life, Eunice? You know, why do you wake up in the morning? What drives you?
I would say what drives me, what pushes me out of bed every morning, is desire to do something and make a difference in my world. Difference in my professional life as a professor. And my work as a professor entails teaching, training, research, and also serving community. But also in my private life, you know, wake up for my family, for my mm-hmm. husband, for my children, mm-hmm. for my relatives, you know, this is what drives me. If I can make a difference in other people's lives, that is what drives me.
To, talking about the work that you do at the university, I mean, what I really appreciate about a lot of the research that you do is what I would call, you know, applied research. It's not, you know, only for the sake of let us see what the scientific issues are, but how can you use the data to really make a difference in communities? So can you share a little bit about, you know, what you're doing now in terms of research, any research or you know, a course that you're leading that that would be of interest for the listeners to hear about?
Yeah, thank you, Maurice. Because of my desire to make a difference in practical life, in real life situations, I'm inclined more towards what we call translational research. That is research that translates into practical development, into making a difference in somebody's life. I have a number of research projects at the moment. One of the closest projects in my heart is where we work with early adolescents to build their confidence and their self-esteem in order to support their transition from childhood to adulthood. You know, my doctoral thesis was on youth sexuality, HIV AIDS, and the role of the church. Mm. And one of the findings of that study was that the church has a major role to play to early adolescents through adolescence, from early adolescence through late adolescence into responsible adulthood. Fortunately for me, at the time I was finishing my doctoral work, that was around 2003, globally, there was a move towards supporting community work, supporting research that goes with community work. So in my university, for example, we were just introducing the office of a deputy vice chancellor in charge of research and extension. So the common story at the time was, don't just do research and publish. It's not just about mm-hmm. publish and perish anymore. It's mm-hmm. also, it's now about research, publish, and innovate. Mm. And innovation was like real work, you know, do something in the community. If you have recommendations, do not pass them on to somebody else. Pick a little of those recommendations and translate it into practical development. So I was keen to translate some of the findings of my doctoral work. And one of the findings was like, you know, the church can do something. And as part of the church, you know, I am church myself, I'm part of the church. I said, well, what is it I can do? And with some colleagues, we came together and worked with the local church to start an adolescent project where we brought young girls and young boys together and took them through what we were calling an initiation program. Traditionally in Africa, we have initiation rites, but over time, those initiation rites have been eroded. And instead there's something that looks like a rite, but it's not a rite really, you know, with modernity, it's not serving the purpose for which it was created in the traditional societies. So we came together and together with the church, we reconstructed the initiation rites in traditional societies to bring in Christian values and combine them with African indigenous values and form a holistic package with which we transition young people from childhood to adulthood. So that became then a project, and the project has been running for the last, this is a 15th year now. Yeah, this is the 15th year that the project has been running. So that's one of my projects.
Yeah, I find it extremely interesting. I mean, for two reasons. I mean, one is, as you know, my background is cultural anthropology. So you know, this is mm-hmm. definitely in my in wheelhouse, in my interest. The other thing is you know, as part of this podcast and part of the, you know, 100 Mile, I've had a lot of discussions around, you know, what is it with this next generation? And again, need to be careful with generalizations, but the younger generation, how do they perceive religion or how do they perceive spirituality? And is that different than, you know, the older generation? And yeah, I've had a lot of conversations with people on this podcast about it. So what did you learn in terms of, you know, working with the younger generation? Are they still interested in church? You know, if not, why not? And if they are, is that the same church as you grew up with, or is it different?
It's interesting. It's been a great learning experience. And one of the key issues that I've learned is that moral values are very easily formed over adolescence. And it's because of the nature of adolescence. It's itself a transition period, which has a lot of crisis, identity crisis to begin with. And then it has sexual crisis, you know, and it has, you know, young people are faced in mental crisis. Young people are faced with all kinds of crises. And in the midst of those crises, it's very easy to form them into a specific moral direction. And I've also learned that the church can make a lot of difference if it would try, actually. It is still very credible. The church is still very credible in Africa. Many people think very well about the church. And it's not just among older generation, even younger persons. They tend to find comfort. They tend to find a place for the church in their lives. So what I've learned is that we as church are not doing as much as we could should be doing. We are not putting enough effort to support adolescents when they need us most. And the other thing I've learned is that once you have formed adolescents and they become responsible adults, they very rarely leave the right path. It's like lessons for life. Once they have got it, they've got it, you know, and it's very difficult to get them off the path once they have gotten the path. And this we've learned from the adolescents, the alumni who have gone through our program. Since we've been learning for about 15 years now, the young people we met at 15 are now 30 years old. Some of them are out of the country. Some of them are within the country, but in various positions. It's amazing how just doing so little has made so much difference in their lives. We did an assessment study just the other day to evaluate the difference that our program has made for adolescents transiting into adulthood. And we were shocked at what we have been able to achieve. We were not interested in research per se when we started. We were interested in surveys. But at the end of the day, data is actually showing us that this is something that works. So it's been a big lesson for me that it's not so difficult to work with the young people. We get the impression that young people are difficult, young people are rebellious, young people don't have spirituality, but they actually do have a lot of good in them, a lot of values in them, and all they need is a little guidance and they get into the right direction. So that has been amazing for me. I was born a Presbyterian, to very strict Presbyterian parents. So I grew up as a Presbyterian, but I got married into a Catholic family, Roman Catholic family. And in Africa, you don't get married to one person, you get married to a family. So I got married to a Roman Catholic family and I had to become Roman Catholic. So I kind of switched to become a Roman Catholic. So now my current church where I worship is Roman Catholic. But essentially I am a Christian. I mean, I'm very ecumenical. I worship where Sunday finds me, where the need for worship finds me. So I really wouldn't say I'm attached to Presbyterianism or to Catholicism right now. I'm like, any church that works is good for me.
Thanks for sharing that, Yunus. And then with the younger generation that you work with, are they, you know, attached to a certain stream, or are they, is their search a little bit different then? I heard you say, you know, they are still spiritual. They still, you know, find their way, you know, and then especially within the church as well. But are they expecting maybe another type of approach than when you grew up? Do you see that? Or is it very, at the end of the day, very similar?
There's a whole range of young people that we work with. Some are very religious, others are not. Religious in the sense that they are practicing Christians of a certain denomination, for example. Others are more liberal and are kind of ecumenical. Others are not even religious, but they are spiritual. You know, they have, they are interested in relation, moral values and healthy relationships. So I wouldn't put all the youth together and say they look like this. They are different kinds of youth depending on their background. Mm-hmm. And with our program, we don't care what your religion is. When we started as an African Christian initiation program. But then we realized that some people are interested in joining the program, but they were not Christians. They were Muslims. Others were interested, but they were not attached to any religion. And over time, we have actually changed the name from African Christian to African Character Initiation Program. So we say, we are interested in spirituality. We are interested in developing character. We are interested in molding young people into healthy relationships for responsible adulthood. So that transition is something we have seen come about because of the different kinds of young people that we are dealing with. So some are very much conservative, like what I was brought up through. Others are a little more radical, you know, like it was very strange for me to hear that one can be spiritual without being religious. But that's something I've learned from young people. They'll tell me they're not religious, but they're spiritual.
As a world, we are facing this pandemic, right? And that's also going on in Kenya. In the States, as well as in some of the Western countries, are very worried about this particular generation, because now it's almost a year where they had to live in different types of circumstances. And while you're younger, you know, that's when you start exploring the world. What do you see there? Do you have similar worries about the youth that you work with because of COVID, or how are they coping? What's going on? What do you see?
For young people, incidentally, it seems like they are not affected as much as older persons are affected. It's very rare to hear of a young person dying of COVID, but it is common to hear that a young person has tested positive because they tested for one reason or the other, but not because they had symptoms. So that's rather interesting. Most of the cases that we are hearing of people who are sick from COVID and dying from COVID are older persons. So we are actually basically not, like, more or less not bothered.
So mental health wise, you're not worried there with the younger generation?
No, mental health, we are. Mental health, we certainly are, because staying at home and restricting young people, at some point we had lockdown. We don't have lockdown anymore. We have a curfew at 10 in the midnight, 10 at night up to 4 a.m., but that is not... It doesn't have much impact. But when we had lockdown, there were issues of mental health because then young people were forced to stay indoors and they were not going to school. But the bigger problem for us with regard to mental health is not exactly associated with COVID, but associated with drug abuse. And there was more incidence of drug abuse during lockdown because young people are idle.
Okay, understood. I also always ask, you know, what are your what are the things that you worry about at the moment? And I mean, you know, more as a, you know, you look at your own society and you see what's happening. So or maybe you don't have any worries. So that's the first part of the question. And then the second part is, you know, where do you see hope?
My biggest worry right now is for young people. I think in Kenya and globally, we have neglected young people. Not just neglected them. I wish we were just neglecting them, you know, just ignoring them. But we are providing all the wrong examples. And we are even exploiting young people. So that young people through and through are on the receiving end in terms of what is not just, what is not right, what is evil, you know. And it's sad for me because I'm wondering what tomorrow will bring, because a lot of our young people, particularly here in Kenya, are in a mess. And we've put them in the mess. People look at young people and they'll say, young people are reckless, young people are... you know, they don't think, they don't do this, they don't do this. But youth life is actually a reflection of the adult world. They wouldn't know what to do if they didn't see what we do. So in Kenya, there's a lot of corruption. So young people have learned corruption. They just want to be corrupt through and through. They want to get rich today. Nobody wants to work hard and take their time and earn their money. They want to get rich today. Two, there are no jobs because we've taken all the jobs, the older persons. We are not interested in policies that will create employment for younger persons. So younger persons are getting into crime as they seek to get rich quickly and that kind of thing. So I'm particularly very worried about the spiritual well-being of young persons, and the future looks quite bleak from where I sit for young people. So my worry is with young people. Yes.
So where do you still see hope, or I hope you still see hope somewhere?
Yes. I still see hope because there are young people, even in those circumstances, you find some young people who are exemplary and have been able to rise above the difficulties of the moment. So I find hope in the very young people, the same young people. Somehow I've given up on older persons. I'm like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. But with the young persons, there's a lot of hope. There is. That's where my hope is.
Okay,
and of course, I'm a woman of faith. So of course, I'm certain that God intervenes in his own way and is, of course, at play. God is at play in all situations, and he will deliver some young people, some next generation. He will certainly make a difference.
Okay.
Yes.
I have a, you know, I call it a bonus question.
Yes.
Very, very different than of the things that I've asked you so far. Yeah. But if I would ask you to mention a song or a piece of music that embodies, you know, for a big part, what you are about, what would that song be, or that piece of music be?
It would have to be some gospel music. Yes. And it's a song. There's a song in my local language.
Hmm.
Says that these people don't know what it means to be defeated. Even when things are difficult, even when things seem like there's no hope, these people have hope through and through, and they never accept defeat because God is on their side. So that would be the song. Seeing, yes.
Okay. And when was, do you still remember when was the first time that you heard that song?
Maybe in the last 6-7 years.
7 years ago? Yeah. And where was it? Where was it?
In a public transport system. And okay. You know, I was sitting in a public van, and then it played, and I was like, wait a minute. That seems to be saying what I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, we are slowly, you know, coming to the end of our conversation today. Any last message for the listeners from you? Mm. What is your last message?
I don't know how to put it, but I'd like to put across the message that people are generally good people.
Mm.
And they want to do good. Occasionally, there may be some negative things happening here and there, but by and large, human beings are good. Persons are good. Occasionally, they may do this and that, but at the end of the day, you find that they want to relate well with other people. They want to relate well with the environment. They want to relate well even with the holy other, except that situations sometimes can get a little difficult and get them off that perspective. But by and large, I believe in people. Yes.
No, thanks. You know, what you just said reminds me of a book I read recently. It's called Humankind, A New History by the Dutch historian Bregman.
Mm-hmm.
And Rutger Bregman. Bregman. I don't know how I have to pronounce this Dutch name into English. But so he comes up with a lot of evidence that, you know, in essence, people are good, exactly as you said. So I would advise you to maybe to read that book, because it's really a good book, I think. And I would also encourage the listeners to listen to it or to read it. So thank you so much.
Humankind?
Yeah, the title of the book is Humankind.
Mm-hmm.
A Hopeful History by Rutger, R-U-T-G-E-R, Bregman, B-R-E-G-M-A-N.
Okay, Bregman, okay.
Yeah, I think it's a good ending of our conversation today. So thank you so much.
Most welcome.
Good luck with everything you do. You do wonderful work. And I also wish you all the best, in your personal challenges that are going on.
Yeah, wish you well too, and thank you for the great work you do, including the very self-giving 100-mile walk. I mean, it's amazing that you do that kind of thing.
It has gone a little bit out of hand, right? I was only planning to do it once or twice, so yeah. No, thank you so much. And I have to say, you know, it's also a great honor, and I'm humbled by all the people that are willing, you know, including you, willing to talk with me. And I hope that these conversations contribute a little bit to people, that they see that people might have different perspectives, but there might be something that you heard today where you think like, oh, you know, so this will help me to start a dialogue with my neighbor or with somebody else that I didn't know before. And that's what we need as a world. We are to realize that we are all interconnected, mm-hmm. and that we need to solve the challenges that we have together. So, yeah. And so yeah, for me, you're an example of somebody that shows that. So yeah, thanks a lot for who you are and what you do. And until we speak again next time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Walk, Talk, Listen. Please check us out on www.100mile.org or follow us on Facebook or Instagram.